Welcome to the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast. I am your host, Isaac Vansky, CEO and founder of Adventure Media. I am here with Danielle Immerman, our content queen, and Patrick Gilbert, director of operations and author of Join or Die, Digital Advertising in the Age of Automation, available now on Amazon.com in bookstores that are open near you. And check it out. Buy a copy or two. It's a great gift for the holiday season. And just for yourself, it's a real digital advertising masterclass, in the words of Larry Kim, founder of WordStream and Mobile Monkey. It's a beautiful book. We've been doing giveaways. Come to our site, come to joinordiebook.com for exclusive members-only content pulled directly from the book. These are all things that are going to supercharge your digital advertising education, but most importantly, your campaign performance. And it's an exciting milestone to have published a book like this. And we're here to talk about some of the concepts in the book and hopefully communicate to you guys some strategies that will help you be a more sophisticated online marketer. My first question, Patrick, is dealing with trust. We've been dealing with this for a long time. There has always been a natural feeling from clients. I mean, clients will interchange with advertisers. Clients and advertisers, these are either our clients or Google's advertisers. There's always a natural, innate sense of distrust towards Google, towards Facebook. And I think years ago, we sort of positioned ourselves as a middleman or as an objective third party that will help spend a client's budget in a most trustworthy fashion, not favoring one platform or the other, or be a custodian over budget and maybe even agreeing or playing in or validating that feeling of mistrust. On a personal level, I never liked that attitude. I'm a big free market type of guy, and I always feel that in a free market system, there's going to be scam artists, there's going to be bad actors that are out to fleece people, but ultimately these bad actors get discovered as sociopaths and they're out of business because that's how a market works. So I've always felt that it was incorrect to look at Google and look at Facebook and approach them with this great deal of mistrust that you're just trying to fleece me out of my advertising dollars. But what is your perspective on this conversation around trust? That's A. B, I feel to an extent that the content that you're communicating around machine learning and algorithmic bidding would further exacerbate that anxiety if someone were to have such an anxiety. So if it's going to exacerbate the anxiety, how do you address it? And it's important because people who have clients or people who are forking over their advertising dollars to these relatively opaque giants who have, to some degree or another, monopolized the digital advertising industry. If you look at Google and Facebook combined, what are they doing? 80% of digital advertising in the United States? So what do you say to all this? How do you break it apart for us?
So I think this is at the root of the automation issue or topic, because in adopting automation into your digital ad campaigns, you're essentially giving the keys to Google or Facebook or whomever. And there's a lot of pressure with that. And a lot of advertisers have been burned in the past because they've adopted these strategies and had poor results. And it's human nature. Instead of accepting the blame, they place the blame on the technology. There's been this prerogative over the last 10 years that automation, particularly with Google, is just Google's way of trying to get you to spend more money. And, you know, they're just going to raise your bids, and they want you to increase your budget, and they want you to do all these other things. They want to take away search term data so that you can't actually see what you're bidding on. They're removing all these levers because all they want to do is be able to increase the amount of money that you're spending. I disagree with that wholeheartedly, but I think that's a whole separate topic about personal responsibility and accountability. But on the other hand, I think it's dangerous to just blindly trust any of the platforms. So we work a lot with the folks at Google. We're a premier partner, so we have access to a team of agency development managers and account strategists and the product team that helps us out with a lot of things. And a lot of their best practices are frustrating at times. And I feel that. And I feel that a lot of agencies are, they're sick and tired of hearing Google say, well, this isn't going to work because you have to give them more time, or this didn't work because you didn't give it enough budget, or something else that is really just something that clients or agencies don't want to hear. So it's tough because ultimately, we're the ones that are responsible for the performance. We are the ones that are that have the keys to the ad budgets and are responsible for whether or not, you know, this client is successful. And ultimately, someone's paycheck is tied to this at the end of the day. Our clients are feeding their families with the results of the campaigns that we're running on their behalf. So we basically sit in the middle of, hey, we want to trust Google, but not too much. And we basically have to pick and choose which goes where. But I think it really comes down to this. I think we have to start with the understanding that Google actually has our best interest in mind. We should not ignore the fact, and I think it is crazy for us to not start with the fact that Google will do better in the long run if advertisers earn more profit. So therefore, they're incentivized to help advertisers realize more profit because then they will naturally spend more money on the platform. That's just basic economics working at play. So they are incentivized that. So if we start with this fundamental idea of, okay, let's assume that this in a vacuum should work, then if it doesn't work, your conversation and the way that you handle that issue, that challenge, is going to be very different than if you were to just say it was nefarious, it was egregious, they're taking my money, they were bad actors. So we need to start with that. And then the conversation can go in a way that's much more positive and meaningful.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. A long time ago, I had this like theory, or it was a refining of a theory around Facebook, because we saw this thing, and this always happened, where you'd start off with a Facebook campaign with a certain budget, and it didn't really matter what the budget was. But whenever you increase the budget, your CPAs would go up. Now, like most things where people like to pin phenomena on one variable, I'm sure it's a multivariate analysis, but I would suspect that one of the reasons, or I had this theory, this is like playing devil's advocate a little bit, taking the position of, is there a time to distrust the system? Where it's not really true. It's not absolute. Google and Facebook are not incentivized for you to have the lowest CPA possible. They're incentivized for you to have the lowest possible CPA that you're willing to pay. If you look at it from a purely economic model, right? Let's say you take all emotion out of it. If you were to build this out in a spreadsheet, Facebook and Google would make the most amount of money if they could figure out the CPA that you're willing to pay. So I had this theory that when you increase budget, you were sending Facebook and Google a signal that you're happy with the results. So their systems are calibrated to, okay, we're happy with the results. How happy is Patrick or Isaac or Bose or Pepsi with their results? If they're too happy and we could actually increase their CPA and their click costs a little bit and they'll still be happy enough to spend the maximum that they're willing to spend, then that would be the perfect economic balance. So I'm saying that for two reasons. One is just to indicate, I think that's the economic truth. They're incentivized to have the lowest possible CPA for their advertisers that the advertisers are willing to pay. That's A. The second reason why I'm saying that is because it doesn't matter. My point is that even if that's true, so there's like a little bit of this gray black box element to the bidding system. It's like, okay, well, what the hell are you going to do? Like, you want advertising Google or not? Are you still getting a CPA that's profitable for you? You think you're going to go and spend that money on a billboard, or you're going to go and spend that money on expensive backlinks and do as well? Like, no, you're not. Like, that's the rules of the game. So if Larry Page and Sergey Brin sat down at the computer, could they update the algorithm for you to have a little bit of a cheaper deal on your conversions? Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? You could speculate from today until tomorrow, but it doesn't matter. They're still incentivized for you to do well. That's the main point. That's the bottom line. And this comes, it's like the same thing. We get clients all the time that have successful Amazon stores, right? This happens all the time. And it's crazy to me how people don't see this, which because it's just so unbelievably obvious. So they have all this tremendously successful business on Amazon. And I actually think it comes back to this bias. It's a very common psychological bias that we tend to attribute success to our own effort and ourselves. And we tend to attribute failures to external cues, to other people. Like when something fails in my life, it's like it's another person's fault. But when I do something well, it's my, and it's a paradox because they can't both always be like that. So with Amazon, you have this, you have a very successful Amazon business, and we get a client that submits a form on our site and they say, hey, we have this, we're doing $10 million a year in sales in Amazon, but I can't stand paying Amazon this 15% commission. It's crazy. It's highway robbery. There's no reason we shouldn't get this traffic from our own site where we don't have to pay a 15% commission. So the question goes like, okay, well, let's just break this out. You have to first understand that Amazon's getting you the traffic and that there seems to be this emotional feeling that's like, oh, it's my traffic. These are my customers. So why can't they just buy from my site? No, they're not your customers. They're Amazon's customers. And Amazon is leasing these customers to you for a 15% commission. Okay, now if you want to go and replicate that, it's going to cost you. If Amazon's sending you 1,000 visits a day and you want to get 1,000 visits a day to your site, where are those visits coming from? Amazon's not going to send them to you. That's not how they make money. Oh, sure, you can go buy them from Google. Oh, I have to buy them from Google, or I can buy them from Facebook, or I could run social media campaigns. Well, how much is that going to cost you? More or less than the 15% commission of the cost of goods sold that you're paying Amazon? I don't know. Maybe more, maybe the same. But it's like, it's the initial attitude where it's like, I'm getting all this traffic from Amazon. These are my customers. I should get it off my own site.
And that ignores the fact that Amazon has spent 20 years building a brand built on trust and other really, really powerful things that work in an e-commerce setting. And people tend to ignore that when they try and move off of Amazon and send traffic to their own site. They just think it's going to be very easy to do. I actually bought a phone charger recently from a former client of ours because I knew that it was good, but I didn't buy that from the company. I bought it from Amazon. It's an Amazon product. Like, it's not, as much as you think this is your brand, it's not. You're selling on Amazon, you're an Amazon product.
Right. Yeah. And I think the idea is a little bit similar. It's a different idea that we were discussing with trust towards Google, but it's a little bit of a similar idea. It's like the systems aren't perfect. The systems aren't perfect. And you have to have enough intellectual honesty to realize that there's forces external to your product and what you've built or your service that are determinant factors of your capacity to sell and generate revenue. Meaning the same way with Amazon, there's external factors. There's Amazon, the traffic that they're bringing. These are determinant factors in your success. So too, there's Google. There's an imperfect system that you might not love, but ultimately it's designed in a way that has to be successful for the advertisers. It cannot work. Google cannot survive unless their advertisers were generating a profit. Now that itself doesn't mean that you're going to generate a profit. That itself doesn't mean that algorithm bidding or will work for you. It doesn't mean that Google at all will work for you. We have clients all the time. Prospects all the time that come to us, and we just do a quick analysis of the cost of the product, the revenue generated to the client, and we look at the competitive landscape. It's like, no, there's no way Google's going to work for you. The clicks are too expensive. There are too many other competitors in your niche that are extracting more revenue per customer. They're willing to bid more based on the minimum estimate of what a cost of a click is going to be. It's like, this is not going to work for you. Like, don't even, like, it's, so it's not a perfect system for every advertiser, but fundamentally the system, who it's catering towards in aggregate, is a system designed for it to be as successful as possible for the advertisers in the system. Keeping on the same theme here of trust, what was our agency like around this discussion, let's say 4 years ago, when we would talk to clients and, oh, like our whole value is, you know, we're not going to just turn on this new target CPA thing from Google and let things be automated. We're going to actually watch and manage and we'll make decisions. And how has that discussion and attitude changed, specifically client facing?
Yeah, the previous mentality was rooted in essentially a sales tactic. You get a prospect on the phone and you talk about how, you know, your campaign shouldn't be automated. They should be managed by somebody like me that's going to make thousands of changes logged manually in your account because you can't trust Google because they just want to spend your money. I'm looking out for you. When you paint Google or somebody else, you know, anything as a villain, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, right? So you naturally start to develop trust with this prospect or your client. So this is essentially propaganda, intentional or not, that agencies have put out for a very long time. And I can say that with confidence because we were guilty of this. We subscribed to this propaganda and we spewed it ourselves. We used to get on the phone with prospects and talk to them about how automation is bad. So I am fully willing to come out and admit that we used to do this and it was wrong. And I apologize. I don't know who I'm apologizing to for that. It was the wrong way to do it. So it really was rooted in fear, though. So it was this idea that you wanted to build trust with this client and basically win their business, but also that, hey, if everything becomes automated, then there's going to be no room for the agency. Like if I'm sitting here and most of my job is testing new ad copy and making manual bid changes in an account, then all of a sudden, if that's going to be automated, then what am I going to do? Why are clients going to continue to pay me? And it's a very narrow-minded focus, but it's very hard when you're in that mindset, when it's, 2014, 2016, and you spend so much of your time doing that, to really see the bigger picture of what's really happening here and to know where your agency would fit in the client's world if all of these things all of a sudden became automated. So you basically painted Google as a villain, as a sales tactic, which was essentially rooted in fear that you were going to be replaced by robots. And we did that. And I'm totally willing to admit that we did it.
I think David Rodznitsky gave you this feedback after he read your book. And he said, well, what about the times and the instances and the advertisers where machine learning and algorithms will not work? What are the instances where, or what are some scenarios or some business settings that an advertiser might default to a non-machine learning system? So talk a little bit about that. When are the machines bad? What are they still not good at? And what are some dimensions one advertiser might look at? Maybe it's spend, maybe it's volume of daily conversions, maybe it's long-term or short-term goals that would lead you to suggest not using some of Google's algorithms and machine learning.
It was good feedback from David, and Brad Geddes had similar feedback for me that I didn't do enough to talk about all the bad things. But I specifically did that for two reasons. One, a lot of the criticisms of the machine, and I'll touch upon a few of them in a second, they'll naturally work themselves out with time and data, because that's how machine learning works. So I didn't want to necessarily put a bunch of criticisms in the book that won't necessarily be criticisms or even, worth talking about a year from now or 18 months from now, once a full cycle of Moore's Law has run its course, basically. But the second reason I didn't do it is because we're so far away from where we should be with discussing automation. We still need to pull people to that line of just trusting that Google has your best interests in mind and trusting that in a vacuum, this technology should work. We're so far away from that. And it's a long book. There's a lot of meat in here. Really had to pull people through to get to that point. And once we're all there, then I will publish a second book or we'll do whatever it needs to be to talk about all the pros and cons and use cases and all these different scenarios. I'm happy to lead that conversation because I am willing to acknowledge all of the flaws of this technology as well. But I think we need to get there first before we start. It's not worth it to stop funding self-driving cars because we're aware of the potential for it to go wrong. Ultimately, this technology will be good, and let's all kind of agree to that and try to and look at all this, but once we kind of buy into it. So that's kind of why I avoided the topic, at least in large part of the book. But as far as to answer your question, the machine, as far as these short-term things, the machine is, we're getting there in terms of the quantity of data that is necessary to help drive performance in your Google campaigns and your Facebook campaigns. We've already seen this change. It was probably 2 years ago that when you were reading up on target CPA, Google was very adamant that if you want target CPA to work effectively, you need to make your budget, your daily budget needs to be at least 10 times what your target CPA should be. So if your target CPA is $100, your daily budget should be at least $1,000. Otherwise, the machine's not going to have enough freedom and ability to test and learn confidently to achieve your goals. Now, that's hard to do for a lot of advertisers. Thankfully, though, as all these systems improve over time, that minimum threshold of budget has been reduced over time. Google doesn't even talk about the 10 times thing anymore. They've sort of avoided that language. They don't have a specific number that they recommend. Obviously, I think use your intuition here. But some things like that, right? So we're moving in the right direction as far as quantity of data and quality of outcomes. That'll change. But still, what is the machine not good at? The machine is not good at making assumptions about your target audience or your goals is really what it is. If you have two products that are priced the same on your website both of which have two different profit margins. A machine learning algorithm will not know that unless you tell it, unless you teach it about those different variables. And this is something that a lot of people ignore. They say, well, you know, shouldn't they be able to, I'm on maximized conversion value, but I'm less profitable. It's like, okay, well, what sort of revenue tracking are you using? Are you really factoring in your profit margins? Are you breaking out your campaigns in a way that you can segment based on different return on ad spend goals? Well, no. And it's like, okay, well, that's your fault. So you have to realize that we talk a lot about how smart this technology is, but it's still very dumb. It still is not going to make an inference or an assumption about what you're trying to get at unless you specifically put the information in to set it up for success. So really understanding what your goals are and putting them on paper, it's like, well, it's not that I'm trying to receive a certain return on ad spend goal. I'm trying to earn profit. So let me really deconstruct what I mean by return on ad spend goals, figure out what my profit is, and then use all of that to feed the data into the system the proper way.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's interesting that there really is no perfect solution. And like I always say, you got to test. What I think is a very nice thing about digital advertising platforms is it's relatively easy to test things. And we have prospects that come to us all the time and they ask for like these specific predictions and projections and what is my CPC going to be? It's like, I don't know, let's just run a test. That's what's so nice about this. And that's also the best way to do it. Like you could do research and you could predict, but ultimately you don't know. You don't know what's going to work and what's not going to work. Every business is totally unique. And compared with traditional advertising where you had to go out and do a large media buy or a big outdoor campaign or a big print campaign, and it was expensive. Even in a local market, it was expensive. Over here with digital advertising, you could take $5,000, $10,000, and you could run a good test and you could actually see what might work, what might not work, which is typically the best way to do it as far as I could tell.
Totally agree.
My last question here is the broader discussion about jobs and the more narrow discussion about jobs that we're familiar with inside the digital advertising industry. So there's an ongoing debate about technology in general replacing jobs. And there's a lot that goes into that. There's political beliefs, there's moral beliefs, and it's not just automation, it's new technology. A prime example is Amazon putting bookstores out of business. Not only mom and pop bookstores, but independent bookstores. Before Amazon, there was the department store that came in and put every general store and boutique on Main Street out of business. And it's the same progression. So it's updated technology, it's updated business systems, it's ambitious enterprises. And the same thing we have here in today's age with automation, robotics, machine learning, replacing a lot of jobs. Millions, like in, I think the trucking industry is the one probably see the largest turnover. It's enormous. I think there's like in 50% of the states in America, trucking is the most popular position, which is wild. You know, we're coastal elites out of touch with the regular person, but in middle America, it's like, you know, trucking is a massive industry and millions of jobs are at risk in the advent of automation. In our own little sliver of the universe in digital advertising, automation is probably going to put agencies or practitioners out of business as well. So Canva, for example, Canva is a software we use. It's a $1 billion company now. It's huge, grew extremely quickly. And there's no doubt in my mind that Canva has probably put a number of graphic design departments and graphic designers out of a job because they made things that graphic designers used to have to do accessible. And look at technology companies around travel. Right, where are travel agents? It used to be you wanted to take a flight to Arizona and book a vacation. You called a travel agent. That's how you booked a vacation. Like no one calls a travel agent anymore. So there's, I guess, what are your thoughts on that in general? Where do you personally land on what side of that debate, whether it's good or it's bad or it's neither or it just is, aside from where you land personally, but what would your advice be to our cohort of digital advertisers and agencies for how to not lose their jobs?
It's a heavy topic because broadly about technology in general and innovation, knowing you and I, like we're pro tech and I enjoy new things and, but it certainly comes with a lot of pitfalls. The trucking example you gave is a serious concern. And this is something that, you know, Andrew Yang was running for president. He raised a lot of awareness about this specific problem. And whether or not you agree with his potential solutions for it, I think it's still a really good conversation to have. Is, you know, we've had technology replace people's jobs essentially for the last, you know, thousands of years. And there's, you can find some interesting articles about the horse and buggy industry and the lobbyists that were against automobiles and had these mass riots about pushing back against Ford and the Model T. There was like one or two car accidents that took place where, you know, somebody was killed. And so a lot of people in America were up in arms about it. And they were burning down Ford cars that they saw randomly in the streets. So the idea of like, you know, the Luddite revolution and people pushing back against technology is nothing new. The problem, though, is that it's exponentially happening now. And that's why it's scary, because the same, you know, that truck driver that might be replaced, so to speak, by an autonomous truck in the next 5 to 7 years probably doesn't have the amount of time, resources, stamina to go out and learn whatever skills it is. You know, they're not going to go to a coding boot camp. Like, that's just the reality of it. Everyone says like, well, you know, learn new skills, adapt. It's becoming harder to do that. I don't really have the answer to it. Thankfully, it's not really my decision to make, but it's certainly something I think everyone should be aware of and everyone should be thinking about and what it's going to mean for their livelihood. But what I can speak to specifically is how it impacts our industry, because I spend a lot of time thinking about this. I've kind of come to the realization that I'm going to need to continue to reinvent myself in my career. I already have, as I outline in the book, like my job that I do today is very different from the job I did 5 years ago. And it's exhausting to reinvent yourself and it's exhausting to learn new skills. But I know and recognize that it's really the only way to survive. And I'm probably going to have to do it 3 to 5 more times entirely, maybe more, throughout my career. And that's just it. You can't just learn a couple skills and go do the same thing for 40 years and earn a pension. Especially in our field, it's not going to work. So I would say, as far as how it impacts our industry specifically, we can still be relevant. And I outline in the book, I make the argument that automation will change your job, but it won't replace you necessarily. And in fact, I would argue that the opportunity to provide value as an agency to a client is now greater than it has ever been, thanks to automated technology. And that's hard for a lot of people to understand, because this industry has really been filled with people that are operating manual tasks, and they're basically doing things that can be easily replaced by a machine learning algorithm. Now, if those people do not have the skill set or the desire to obtain the skill set that's going to allow them to thrive in this new era, then they will be replaced. That is why the title of the book is as ominous as it is, because that's the hard reality of this. So those skills are creative problem solving. It's having an understanding of data literacy, which is something I talk about a lot in the book. I am not in particular like a data science guy. I'm a marketer first, and I've learned a lot about data science. I don't do a lot of that sort of in-depth analysis that a lot of people on our team do, but I understand it enough to be able to talk to them about it and convey it to clients. So you have to have this element of data literacy if you want to be able to thrive in the automation era. So there's a lot of these skills that are like that I think are necessary if someone in our industry specifically is going to continue to survive in this new era.
Perfect. That's a good short and sweet response. We'll hold it here for this episode. Patrick, thank you for joining. I think this was a pretty stimulating discussion. There's a lot more that could be said on all of these topics. If you're still with us, one, thank you. Two, head over to Amazon.com. and pick up your copy of Join or Die, Digital Advertising in the Age of Automation, written by Patrick Gilbert, forwarded by myself and David Sable, the former global CEO of Young & Rubicam. It's a wonderful book. It's a real masterclass in digital advertising. Patrick goes much deeper into some of the topics that we discussed here today in the book, and you'll have it in its entirety, and you'll be able to read it and reread it and reread it again and implement these practices in your own agency and in your own campaigns. Until next time, this has been the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast.